our elected officials supporting a responsible transportation budget for the state of Wisconsin. Petitions and info are located in the social hall, and you can talk to Jerry afterwards, Jerry Flagus. There's going to be a book discussion next Sunday, February 5th, on Evicted, Poverty, and Profit in the American Cities after church. You can talk to Carrie Duma afterwards regarding more information. And today from 12 to 2 p.m., there will be a forum here at LCUUC. The subject is Black Lives Matter, what it is and what it is not, and why we care. Now more than ever, this movement is important. The forum will be led by Ann Hidkamp, Justice Builder from UU Church West. This workshop will enhance our understanding of the Black Lives Matter movement. In addition to the main questions above, we will explore a number of issues, including, in what ways do we commit subtle actions of racism? How do we use language and actions that can be unintentionally offensive to people of color? What does it mean to be anti-racist versus just non-racist? Where are we now as a country in terms of racism? And what do we do now? Social Justice will provide a soup lunch before the forum for those attending. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you have brought with you as we begin our service today. Thank you.
We are all longing to go home to some place we have never been, a place half remembered and half envisioned. We can only catch glimpses from time to time. Community. Somewhere there are people with whom we can speak with passion without having those words catch in our throats. Somewhere a circle of hands will open up to receive us and eyes light up when we enter. Voices celebrate with us whenever we come into our own power. Community means strength that joins our strength to do the work that needs to be done. Arms to hold us when we falter. A circle of healing. A circle of friends. Somewhere we can be free, so come and be strong. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor.
Thank you.
It does, but my pants fall down. I tried it. It didn't work. I need a belt. We light our chalice together today, and we say, may we rejoice in needing one another, and may we be glad to be part of each other's lives and the greater whole. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn number 203, All Creatures of the Earth and Sky, in the Gray Hymnal. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Claire Johnson, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you've come from, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
Of our community. And one of the ways that we care for the people around us is by contributing to local food pantries. We do that financially, and we do that by collecting non-perishables each week, which we donate about once a month. So if you've brought food items to share, please bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite the children to stay up front for a story with our worship associate, Claire.
Claire.
morning. Today's story is called Harriet in the Garden by Nancy Carlson. It was a beautiful summer day. Harriet was playing ball with some pals. Across the park, Mrs. Hoosett was working in her garden. Mrs. Hoosett had been waiting for this day for a long time. Her prized dahlia was in full bloom. "I must call the garden club and have them come over today and have a look," she said. Meanwhile, Harriet was playing outfield. Suddenly, George hit a fly ball. Harriet just had to catch it. If she didn't, it would be a home run for sure. Harriet ran back and back. She kept her eyes on the ball. She was concentrating so hard that she never even noticed when she came to Mrs. Hoosett's garden. She ran backward, right through the perfect mums. Then she trampled through the lilies. In the middle of those rose bushes, she caught the ball, and then she fell down right on top of the prize dahlia in full bloom. "Oops," says Harriet. "Let's get out of here," said her pals. Everyone ran except for Harriet. She looked around at the garden. Everything was ruined. Suddenly, Harriet heard Mrs. Hoosett's voice. "What's happened to my beautiful garden?" Harriet was so scared that she just took off. She ran and she ran and she never turned back. Harriet ran all the way home, up the stairs and into her bedroom. She slammed the door. "Maybe she didn't recognize me," thought Harriet. But she decided she'd better spend the rest of the day inside. "Are you all right, Harriet?" Mother asked. "Just fine," said Harriet. That night, Harriet couldn't eat her supper. Her favorite television program wasn't very interesting. She didn't even care when Mother made popcorn balls. When Harriet went to bed, she couldn't sleep. And when she finally fell asleep, she had bad dreams. The next morning, Harriet made a decision. She went straight to Mrs. Hoosett's house and confessed. Then she spent the rest of the day helping Mrs. Hoosett plant new flowers and tie up the broken rose bushes. They had a good time. When Harriet got home, she was a mess. "Harriet, are you all right?" Mother asked. "Just fine," said Harriet. And that's the end of my story.
And if I could have Kaya. May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. If you all will follow Kaya to your classes, and if the rest of you will help me to sing the children to their classroom, song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are written in your order of service. A new minister was quite concerned about the finances of her church. And determined to increase giving, she wrote an amazing, long, and fiery sermon dedicated to financial generosity. And a little girl in the front row got restless as the sermon dragged on and on and on and on. And finally, unable to stand it a minute longer, she leaned over to her mother and she whispered very loudly, "Mom, if we give her the money now, do you think she'll let us go?" Just a reminder, I love you all very much, and the sermon is coming up within the next half an hour. This morning's offering will now be given and received. I think that song could make me feel good about doing almost anything. So thank you, Tracy. And thank you all for everything you do and for these gifts given for the life and the work of this community. One of the reasons that we do come together in community is to share both our laughter and our tears. And we do this in a whole bunch of ways, but several of the ways are that before the service, you can always come up and you can light a candle silently. And during the service, we speak aloud and we light candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand. The ushers will bring you a microphone. I'd like to start and ask Claire, would you please light a candle of sorrow and concern for every refugee who has been stuck at an airport, who is back in their own home country, not sure if they can get back in, for every refugee family split apart right now. I'd like you to light a candle of joy for Christy Bowden, who became a grandma the other day. And I'd like you to light a candle of sorrow. A dear friend of Doug and Nancy's, Bob Simeon, passed away the other night, and he was an amazing choir director. Some of you may know he directed at West. And so please light a candle of sorrow for that.
I want to light a candle of concern for our country. The fact that the president ordered something for the memorial of the Holocaust to go out without mentioning the word Jewish, as if the Jews did not suffer more than anybody else during that war. Thank you.
This is Tom. There's a lot going on in my life, and you can make it all one candle if you want. I'm We're closing on the sale of our house in Pewaukee on February 10th, and we're closing on the purchase of our house in Beaufort, South Carolina on February 27th, so you can imagine all the things around that. And besides that, I'm taking my dad to the VA hospital next week for heart catheterization and possible interventions, and my mom, too. I'm taking her along. And besides that, my 26-year-old child, who is transgender, is having a court date on next week for name change, and it's complicated by the fact that their birth certificate is not in the U.S. They immigrated when they were three.
I'm Tom McKee. Would you please light a candle of joy for all the music and the joy of that music that Bob Simeon brought into the world while he was here? He was a wonderful man.
This is Carrie. I don't think we could light enough candles for all the concerns that we have for people in our country and all over the world who are living in fear right now based on the tone that's coming out and the words that are coming out from our administration.
This is Mary. I'd like to light a candle of joy for last weekend when we went to Washington, D.C. as a family and stayed with my sister-in-law and her four daughters and friends all marched with us. And seeing the marches happen all over the world was just a phenomenal thing. And it wasn't just marching. So there's so many actions to come, and I think the spirit of that day is one that we have to hang on to.
I would like to light a candle of joy for all of people who are protesting in the airports and the attorneys from the ACLU who did their work pro bono and were able to get a temporary stay for these refugees. So let's keep the work up and power to us people.
And this is Linda, candle of joy for our social justice committee and the work that they're doing to help improve dialogue between people, and also for the Milwaukee rep because they've got this community engagement program and a wonderful opportunity to engage with diverse people in Milwaukee after the productions.
The last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we hold in our hearts, but we haven't been able to speak aloud here today.
Sometimes I help, and sometimes I don't. I hold the door open for one behind me, or I rush through preoccupied in thought. I vote, but not always. When solicitations come through the mail, some catch my eye or heart, and I scent at least something. Others I basket as junk mail. A friend is having a hard time. I think I should phone to see how she is. But I just don't feel like doing it tonight. Whom should I help anyway? Senior citizens, battered children, human rights victims, whales? Well, if we don't defuse the nuclear threat, there'll be no tomorrow. But if we don't support education and the arts, what kind of tomorrow will it be? If I stop to think about it, I help out for all kinds of reasons. Maybe it's because I should. It's a matter of responsibility. But there's usually a maze of other motives, a need for self-esteem, approval, status, power, the desire to feel useful, find intimacy, pay back some debt. How can I keep my heart open and not go under? I've got my own life to live, after all. Still, I'd like to do more for others. What do I have to offer, and what would help most? complicated business, all this. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
I am talking to a woman who is working for the Gallup poll. She's actually doing a poll on how much time people spend helping. She's trying to explain the criteria. I finally start to crack up, seeing something of the absurdity of it all. You're all crazy. How much time are people helping? What kind of question is that? Tell Gallup he's nuts. She started to laugh as well. I know. That's what I said too. What can I tell you? It's a job. She was sort of whispering, which made me laugh more. We got into this conspiratorial, infectious laughter after all. When we stopped laughing, I asked, was that helping? She said, I guess so, sort of. Why was it? I said, that's your job. We were trying to make the best of a nutty situation. In fact, that's what I'm trying to do all the time. That's it. I want you to put me down in the Gallup poll as someone who helps all the time. More laughter. She said, we don't have a category for all the time, but we do have a line here that says all of the above. At this point, I didn't know if she was kidding, but I went for it. Perfect. Put me down for under all of the above. I am very all of the above. In fact, you have to put everybody down under all of the above. Everybody's trying to make the best of a nutty situation. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and joining in singing number 1015 in the teal hymnal, I Know I Can.
Thank you.
So when I go to places where people don't know me, parties, conventions, one of the first things I usually get asked is, so what do you do for a living? Now, I don't know about you all, but seeing somebody in one of these is uncomfortable for a lot of people. It feels awkward. You don't know what to do. I don't wear this to parties. And just as a quick aside, how many of you have been uncomfortable throughout the first part of the service? I typically don't wear this here. Has it bothered anybody? Okay.
I didn't even
notice. Okay. Oh, I love this group. But when I say, actually, I'm a minister, usually one of two things happen. Either they look at me and they go, no, seriously, what do you do? And they look at everything from my hair to the painted toes on my gym shoes. Or this is my very favorite. They try to hide their beer or their mixed drink behind an air molecule. And they swallow their cigarette. And they go, you know, I really love Jesus. And I have to explain that, no, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, and please get your beer out of that potted palm, and can we have a conversation? There have been days when I've been really tempted to either say I'm a nurse, which is what I was for years, or I'm a mortician if I don't want to talk to them, and avoid the whole issue. But the reality is that would betray the stole that I wear around my neck. Because I'm a minister with a capital M. That means I answer to call to spend my life doing this work. And I'm trained to do the work of helping people transform and figure out what it is they believe and how to live those values in the world. And I'm answerable to all of you and to ethical and legal codes that control what a minister with a capital M can do. And when I stood up in front of my first church and I was ordained, somebody walked up to me with a stole like this in their hands. They put it around my neck. And the first thing I thought was, oh my God, it is so heavy. It's so heavy. It's material. There's no lead weights. In some ways, it always will be heavy. A minister with a capital M is called out from among the people as an equal to serve in a role. And we wear the weight of that unique role no matter where we are. But it's funny. When I stood up in that church and that first stole was put on me, a minute later, 250 people from that church got up and they came forward to put their hands on me. They honored me with a laying on of hands, and in that moment, that weight lifted. And I understood that I don't stand alone completely. They bear the weight of that stole with me. The power of that stole comes from there. And you bear that weight too. We're Unitarian Universalists, and we're held together by something called congregational polity, which says that we believe in a shared ministry, all believers. That's not ministry, the job. Christianity was our spiritual ancestor. And when it emerged out of the idea that everyone was a priest. When Jesus was alive and walking and talking, he spoke directly to people. He didn't say, you have to go get Bill the priest to stand between you and me to interpret what I am saying. He said, I'm going to talk to you. We're going to have some bread together. You and me. We'll work this out. It eliminated the priestly caste that was found in Judaism. Every person was expected to have a personal relationship. And after he died, they continued that idea into saying, you have to have a personal relationship with the risen Jesus. Either with his writing or with the idea that he's the Christ. Each person in those early communities got asked, what do you bring to the table? Who are you among us? They worshiped together, they shared together, and they trusted their own understanding of what it was they brought to the table. So if someone asked one of them, you know, what's your ministry? Might have said, I'm a baker, I bake bread for the group. Somebody else was a fisherman, he caught fish for the group. What's your ministry? How do you serve with love and joy? That idea carried through to 1520, and Martin Luther said, we're all consecrated priests. As it says in 1 Peter chapter 2, you are a royal priesthood, a priestly kingdom. Revelation, through your blood, you've made us into priests and kings. No disparity between there and here. It's why we pulled out a big old altar that a priest would stand behind, but a minister stands with their people. He also wrote, there are indeed priests that we call ministers. They're chosen from among us, and they do things in our name. This is a priesthood which is nothing else than ministry. The Protestant Unitarians and later the Universalists took from this polity, a shared ministry, each congregation calling forth a professional minister if it wants to, but governing as the people find fit. Shared ministry says to the people, what are you good at? What do you love? What do you do for this community? What do you do for this kingdom of faith? But there's more to it than that, and this is the piece that gets really relevant in times like these. You are not just called to share church governance. That's a small part of what ministry is. You are called to share in the work of prophecy. And this is the place where the weight of my soul is heavy. This is the place where I need your hands helping to lift that weight. Theologian James Luther Adams, who is beloved by many of us, who we call JLA, said the prophetic liberal church is not a church where the prophetic function is assigned to only a few. He said the prophetic liberal church is the church in which persons think and work together to interpret the signs of the times in light of their faith and to make explicit through discussion the thinking that the times demand. The prophetic liberal church is the church in which all members share in the common responsibility to attempt to foresee the consequences of human behavior, both individual and institutional, with the intention of making history in place of being pushed around by it. And he said, only through the prophecy of all believers can we together foresee doom and mend our common ways. Oh, my Lord, the soul just got heavy. For some people, JLA's idea is a little horrifying. When I say prophet, even I tend to get a vision of some fuzzy person who hasn't had a bath in quite a while, standing in rags of goatskin with wild hair, somewhere in a desert and having riotous visions. I think of John the Baptist screaming and shouting in the River Jordan. I think of Ezekiel, who was having visions of wheels within wheels. That doesn't sound very much like anything I want to do this century. So I sat down last night because of something someone else said, and I picked up the book of Ezekiel. And okay, I know all the jokes about this guy and the things he was chewing or smoking while he was sitting out in that desert seeing those prophetic visions. Let me reread it. Chapter 13 is a toughie. 8 through 12, Ezekiel said, "Because of your false words and lying visions, I'm against you, declares the Lord God. My hand will be against the prophets who see false visions and utter lying divination. They will not belong to the council of my people or be listed in the records of Israel, nor will they enter the land of Israel. Then you will know I am God. Because they lead my people astray, saying peace when there is no peace. And because when a flimsy wall is built, they cover it up with whitewash. Therefore, tell those who cover it with whitewash that it's going to fall. Rain will come in torrents, and I'll send hailstones hurling down, and violent wind will come forth. And when that wall collapses, will people not ask you, 'Where's the whitewash you covered it with?'" That sounds biblical. Sounds fancy. But at the time, it was written in the language of the people. Those are common words. The translation is the problem. What would that look like today if we were prophesying in the same way? What would modern prophecy written in a blog or on Facebook sound like? Let's look at Ezekiel again. Light and love call us to this. We must reject lies and false visions. Someone who leads through lies will never be truly great, nor should they be welcome in our country. As we stand together, you will know we embody love. Because a liar will tell us to accept falsehood in the name of peace, when there is no peace. And will build a flimsy wall and cover it with cheap paint and tell us it will protect us. But we have to tell the wall builders and the wall painters that it will fall. When love rises up and storms against the badly built stones, that wall will fall, and people will ask, "Why was this ever built?" When clearly it will not stand. Ezekiel starts to sound a little more promising. Prophecy can sound like a blog post. It can sound like a phone call to a friend. It can sound like the signs of a marcher in Washington, D.C., or the words of a lawyer sitting on the floor doing pro bono work and saying, "I need to be here." It could sound like a letter to a representative. It could sound like talking to a child. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which political party you are. It matters what you care about. It matters what you're willing to fight for. You can be fiscally conservative and care about people. You can be liberal and a jerk. The values that we hold are what matter. The values are what lead us to prophesy. It doesn't have to come in some kind of biblical sounding words. It doesn't have to come from a deep college education. You are not called to get out on the corner and preach hellfire and brimstone unless you really are called to do that, in which case, okay. But you're called to help bear the weight of this stole. You're called to speak truth to power as you see it. You're called to get up in troubled times and say to those you know, here is what I see, and I won't be quiet. Here is where I plant my feet. Only you know what ministry you are called to. Only you know what speaks to you. Only you know your role. Are you John the Baptist standing out in that river? Maybe. Or maybe you're the quiet prophet just holding up a sign. Maybe you're the guy making buttons in a back room so that somebody else can stand on the corner. Only you can say what work you will do as an act of love and service, as the deeds that we honor in place of the creeds that we can never know what you believe. We know what you do. We know what you say out loud. The Baal Shem Tov, whose teachings I follow, says, your life had better be the testament so that I don't have to read the book. I can read you instead. I can look at your entire life and see what it is you would prophesy. Do you like what people will read when they see you? And if not, what are you going to do? I don't know if you are John the Baptist, if you are Bob Dylan with his guitar. I don't know if you're Lady Gaga or Gandhi. I don't know if your truth and my truth match. I don't know if our political parties match. But I know that without you, this stole is meaningless. The weight of this ministry cannot be borne. It would pull me to my knees. It would pull every minister to their knees. You are the power behind it, and it takes all of us to engage in ministry. As our reading said this morning, we're trying to make the best of a nutty situation. In fact, that's what we're doing all the time. We didn't ask for any of this. So that's it. I want you to put me down in the Gallup poll as someone who helps all the time. There isn't a category for all the time, but there's one that says all the above. So perfect. Put us down as all the above. We are very all the above. All of us. Everybody's just trying to do the best in a nutty situation. It's true. Do your best in a nutty situation. Speak bravely. Rise up when possible. Be very, very all of the above. And I'll help you carry your stole if you'll help me carry mine. Amen.
We extinguish the flame of this chalice, and we know that light of truth and love and the warmth of this community go with us until we meet again. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1028, The Fire of Commitment, in the teal hymnal. Thank you.
Go in peace and minister to the world. Peace and may it be so. And I just got told there's enough soup for everyone, so anybody who wants any.